Welcome to Beyond the Show, the podcast home of all things Cannabis Conference. My name is Eric Sandy, and I'm the digital editor of the Cannabis Group at GIE Media. One of the educational sessions at the show this year captures what I think is perhaps the broader theme of the event: strategies to help growers, retailers, and brands succeed in falling markets. You'll notice as you peruse the schedule that many of these sessions directly address the difficult trends facing plant-touching businesses. And not for nothing, we just reported a few weeks back that Whitney Economics' latest survey reveals that less than 25% of those plant-touching businesses are profitable. Nearly half of those businesses are straight up losing money. And there are a lot of reasons for that, but few immediate solutions. At Cannabis Conference, we're going to chart a course through this tough landscape together. And that might sound like a platitude, but it's true. You get enough growers in one room at one time, and they're bound to land on common themes and helpful new ways of thinking about this plant and this industry. If you've been to the show before, you know. And if you haven't, then you'll need to come and find out for yourself later this year. In just a few weeks, in fact. On the show this week is Dennis O'Malley, principal at ECTRI and senior advisor with Oscare Capital, the leading VC focused on medical cannabis in the EU. Dennis was previously the founding chief operating officer of the parent company, a public single-state operator that was born from the largest SPAC in cannabis history. Leading into the parent company, Dennis was CEO of Caliva, which he grew into one of the largest vertically integrated cannabis companies in California. Previous to entering cannabis in 2017, Dennis had a track record of leadership roles in fast-growing technology companies in emerging markets. He co-founded and led a venture-backed software company, ReadyPulse, that enabled brands like Red Bull, Nike, Adidas, The North Face, and Reebok to scale their revenue through ambassador marketing programs. Currently, Dennis is advising innovative cannabis and technology companies in their go-to-market and growth strategies. As I mentioned up top, at Cannabis Conference, he'll be speaking on the panel, Strategies to Help Growers, Retailers, and Brands Succeed in Falling Markets. And we talked about that and much more. So please enjoy my conversation with Dennis O'Malley. Hello, Dennis, and welcome to the show this week. Very glad to get a chance to talk with you about all sorts of things in the cannabis market here in 2023, just a few weeks out from Cannabis Conference, where we'll be continuing this conversation, of course. You know, at the show, you'll be discussing the panel titled Strategies to Help Growers, Retailers, and Brands Succeed in Falling Markets. So as we get this conversation underway, we certainly have our work cut out for us. Nice, broad, but incredibly important topic. Maybe to set the stage, could you tell us a bit about your work over the past year or even over the past 6 months here in 2023?
One, Eric, thanks for having me. And two, I'm really excited for the Cannabis and Business Times conference, you know, in Vegas in August. I think there's going to be a great panel that we're going to have, and looking forward to that. But over the last year, you know, really, I've been able to work with some just incredible companies, and it's really been over the last, you know, 15 months. And I've been doing so in an advisory capacity. One of my goals after leaving the parent company early last year was to get exposure into other markets and other states. I know most people, you know, look at California and say, hey, that's so easy. But, you know, really, you know, California has been a cautionary tale, and trying to get learnings from some of the other, you know, mature markets was certainly a goal of mine. And so I'm now working with companies that are based or have operations in Washington and Oregon, you know, California, Arizona, Michigan, Massachusetts, and New York. And they're companies that span from delivery companies, you know, dispensaries, brands, companies with, you know, new extraction technology, and then vertically integrated companies. And I really feel that the, you know, diversity and the state mix and the company size and the company type has provided a much broader data set for me than I had previously. And so I'm real grateful for those experiences. And then in general, the companies that I'm engaged with are at critical moments of their evolution, and they're looking for some decision support. And those critical moments are, you know, either they need to make some very tough decisions to accelerate the path to profitability, or, you know, in some cases they're getting into new markets, or they're even, you know, on growth trajectories and trying to be able to manage growth.
Absolutely. Well, it's certainly a helpful perspective to bring to this conversation and to this audience, you know, out not only with the podcast here, but certainly at Cannabis Conference. We're going to have folks from up and down the supply chain. I know we're very close to hitting registrants from all 50 states. So that's always exciting to get that geographic diversity. So very excited to hear your perspective on a lot of those business topics. Before getting into maybe some of that here in 2023, I did want to rewind the clock even before your time at the parent company and highlight your work with Caliva, again, also out in the California market. And just sort of curious what lessons you might have learned during your time with that company that you've gone on to then apply more broadly in this more strategic advisory role now.
I think one, in terms of, I have so much respect for everybody in the California market today. It's about as challenging as I've seen it in the last, you know, 7 years. It's intense and it's a daily fight for sure. In terms of, you know, lessons learned around, you know, helping, you know, it see and build Caliva over those years, you know, I think, though California has been a cautionary case study, I think there's been a few areas, you know, that really did stand out. One is, as an operator, having agility, you know, is really key. And I think that the teams at Caliva did a great job of this. You know, I remember in July of 2018, there was a product shortage because there was new regulations that, you know, childproof packaging and testing were going to be implemented. There wasn't many companies that either thought were to be able to take advantage of this, that the teams at Caliva were, and we had a great run at the end of the year because we were one of the only products on shelves because the team was so prepared ahead of time. During COVID, you know, obviously curbside pickup and delivery exploded overnight. Again, the teams at Caliva at the time were the first ones to be able to, you know, implement curbside pickup nationwide. And that was, you know, electronic payments, and it was, you know, touchless. So that was certainly helpful during COVID. And then, you know, for delivery, it was challenging to keep up with demand there. And then I think in, you know, in late 2021 and 2022, the pricing of, you know, distillate and flower, you know, dropped significantly. And, you know, many called it a crash. And I think that it was challenging for, you know, everybody in the industry. But those who were able to take advantage of, you know, some of those opportunities and be nimble to be able to scale back when the market turns, you know, have, you know, continued to show that their success and continue to show their viability. And my hat's off to those who've been able to do, you know, all of that. I think, you know, the second lesson is probably prices will continue to compress. And while we can certainly, you know, in California, look at some other markets like Washington, Oregon, and Colorado, there have been ebbs and flows in terms of pricing. And we're seeing that in 2023 in California for, you know, distillate pricing and for flower. But it really just is a matter of, you know, how fast the prices will compress and when. And given the imperfect pricing strategies of the ecosystem, and that's everywhere from, you know, delivery companies, you know, providing you a $20 credit in your, you know, in your wallet or in your, you know, on your app, to retailers providing, you know, BOGOs for everything, to contract manufacturing companies quoting, you know, a too good to be true pricing. When you're competing in that, you know, imperfect pricing ecosystem, you really need to manage, you know, how and where you're going to want to compete on price, because many times it's just not sustainable for many different reasons. And that's what causes this, you know, downward spiral in some of these competitive, in some of these competitive markets, and being able to pull out of that is really key. And then I think that the last, you know, main takeaway is managing working capital. And this is, you know, covered, I think, been the big headline in California for the last, you know, certainly 3 to 6 months, but it's managing your AR exposure. So, you know, what does COD look like? You know, who and how are you actually doing business with? But that's one side of the other side of it is your AP terms. Are you paying your vendors on time? You know, what do those terms look like? And then just strategies to manage your inventory turns and your levels. You know, some of the most efficient companies that I've worked with and seen have great supplier relationships. They pay people on time. They have really good integrated relationships. Their customer relationships, they're paying them on time because they're providing a, you know, invaluable product or service. And then they're very lean in terms of inventory and very focused on inventory turns. And I think when you have that partnership on your customer and your vendor side, you're able to do those types of things that get you into an efficient company. So I think it's really critical to manage that working capital from all relationship sides.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely some themes in there that I'm sure we will continue talking about as we kind of fast forward into the present moment here. You know, like I said, with Cannabis Conference coming up, the topic of your presentation is strategies to help growers, retailers, and brands succeed in falling markets. And so, you know, I guess this is a natural segue from what you were just discussing. Can you kind of maybe define that term, falling markets? And I know that's verbiage that we had come up with here at Cannabis Conference. It's kind of a catch-all term, certainly includes price compression and much more. But when you're scanning the markets here in 2023 from a plant-touching perspective, what's most concerning, or what makes this kind of a tough set of business conditions here in 2023 that growers, retailers, and brands need to prepare for?
I think in terms of falling markets, I would describe it as just mature markets and it's adult use markets, and it's what the future of the, you know, cannabis market ecosystem will look like. And so I think, and hopefully the learnings from successful companies in Washington, Oregon, California, you know, Michigan, et cetera, will provide some good benchmarks in terms of, you know, what the future looks like. And I think the, you know, to your point around the panel in August at the conference, what I'm thrilled about is that, you know, I'll be moderating the panel, and the real content is going to come from, you know, the three companies that are going to participate on that. And so far we have a 7-year-old California brand in niche categories that have reinvented themselves. It's such a great story. They've taken a lot of lumps, but they're now thriving. And another company is a, you know, profitable, very closely owned, market leading company that's been around for 10 years out of Washington, and the ability for, you know, that their growth in a very mature market in a very tightly contested category is really impressive. And lastly, a 3-year-old vertically integrated company out of Michigan who's done a great job in cultivation, great job of products, but they've really leaned in to a couple different areas where you wouldn't expect when the prices started to decline in that state. So I have so much respect for these founders and executives who are doing all of the hard work, and I've learned so much from them. But I'm really looking forward to being able to tell some of those stories. I think some of the key takeaways out of this, Eric, out of this session will be, how do you execute through a turnaround, by increasing gross margins, in the case of the California niche brand by over 50%. Another one is, from the Michigan company and how they're doubled down on investments in licensing, even though it's been a downturn in the market. And lastly is this company out of Washington. I really look at it like the czar of cannabis. They have such an ability to understand trends, and they're very nimble to be able to, very quickly produce products. And their product launches have really set them apart from other competitors. So I think that those three execs have great stories to tell, and I look forward to supporting them on that panel.
For sure. Yeah, we're very excited about just the format of this panel and just being able to have that kind of in-depth look at, operations that are currently doing very well in these economic climates out there. You did just use the word nimble, and I think that's a really good word to maybe hold in the air for a second, because I wanted to just maybe see if we could add a bit of context here. You know, one thing we're going to be talking about at the show is also investment and access to capital and sourcing the right forms of capital with the right partners even. So I guess this could be a question for businesses at the start of their lifespan or businesses that are looking to grow and find new sources of capital. But how might a business's funding play into their response to these falling markets, given the fact that being nimble can be really helpful?
Unfortunately, it continues to be just completely imbalanced today in terms of plant touching companies and any other parts of the economy. The non-cannabis, you know, VC private equity market has so much, investments. They have so much capital right now that they have to start making, investments, within their funds, probably within the next 2 to 3 quarters. In the VCs that I've talked to, they're actually concerned that they're not going to find enough, solid targets within those next 6 to 12 months to be able to invest in. However, because of, a Schedule I drug, they are precluded from investing in plant-touching cannabis businesses. So when you look at the VCs or private equity, companies that are investing in, in cannabis, obviously the market, and whether it's a public equity market or private equity, has been extremely challenging. And so the reality is that, institutional equity capital for cannabis, plant-touching companies is extremely scarce. But even when it's offered, the terms are not favorable at all. And so it's a really difficult time if you're raising money outside of friends and family and the traditional means where most, most started up. But what might be worse than that is the forms of debt that are more prevalent and more available. But these rates are quoted at, sometimes 15 to 22% before fees, and are often collateralized against, core assets or real estate or IP or personal guarantees. And unfortunately, sometimes, cannabis companies don't have a choice and they're getting into some of these loans. And unless they're a working capital loan where you're able to actually pay it back pretty quickly, these can be absolute anchors, to many companies. And it's an unfortunate reality. And so I think, part of the nimbleness that you talked about, or what I've seen that's worked in a couple cases, and I think companies should look through, is they've had innovative funding methods. So I've mentioned this before, but crowdsourcing platforms, WeFunder, Republic, ThinkFish, they're all taking cannabis companies, and the average raise there is probably 250 to 500K per platform. Each of them have their own different regulations, but with some work and marketing, the terms are generally much better than any alternative. In general, these marketplaces take a 3 to 6% fee usually. There are some of these marketplaces would still not take on plant touching businesses, but certainly we've seen the ability for licensed brands and some others to be successful on these platforms. ERC, the Employee Retention Credit Program, almost all the companies I've worked with have engaged in this program. They've had good success within it. It generally takes 4 to 5 months to be able to complete the process on it. And then bridge funding from partners. A recent company that I was working with was able to get to partner to secure an equity investment at very favorable terms. And when you have that, it doesn't have to be a large investment, but interests are very aligned and the partner's very aligned in terms of what you're doing. So I really do think it's going to take, innovative funding methods for a lot of these companies to, continue to look for funding. The best companies are obviously, contributing, cash flow on a monthly basis. And again, seeing that in some of the mature markets, it can be done. But if you are looking for funding, you're going to have to get really creative to be able to go do that, because the current equity structure and debt structure is somewhat punitive.
Certainly. And I know, along the way there, you mentioned this idea of ensuring that your own vision or even mission is aligned with sources of investment, whether it's firms or otherwise. And that seems like a critical and maybe obvious or not so obvious step to first understand your own mission, whether you're a grower, retailer, or a brand. I think there's certainly this myth from the outside of the industry looking in, and maybe it still persists within the industry as well, this myth that cannabis kind of sells itself and I know folks outside of the industry, I think, still believe that it's an industry that's just printing money. And of course, this is all very untrue and kind of the opposite of what's happening in the business. But could you talk a bit about that kind of central question of identity, whether you're launching a business or you're 5, 6, 7 years in, you know, finding out how to approach the market in your own way, whether you're looking at the bulk market, contract manufacturing, even going into branded markets. Can you sort of elaborate on how businesses might best think about those different paths and, of course, how that relates to, you know, investment and things like that?
If you're okay with it, Eric, I'll look at it a little bit of a different way, and I'll focus just on profitability, because every company needs to get there. It's just a matter of that, at what scale and when and how much funding you have to be able to go do that. So I think in terms of just your notion around the different strategies for different companies, there's no one answer, and there's been so many different innovative business models and so many different I would say innovations. I'm always, you know, learning it and so impressed again by a lot of the players, especially in the mature markets and especially in California, to continue, you know, day in and day out growing their brands and their business. But there's so many hurdles facing all cannabis companies. I think when you start with your strategies and you're looking at, you know, what to do, or if you're looking at your current company, it really starts with the gross margins, and none of this is rocket science at all. But you need to start with, you know, what channels are you in, and really look through that in a bulk channel versus a contract manufacturing channel versus a retail channel versus a D2C channel are all very different. But I think you need to be able to look at what your economics are through all those channels. What often gets missed, I've seen in companies today, is really productizing whatever products or services that they're selling and marketing. And that could be anything from, you know, their strains to, you know, is it their bigs, smalls, you know, popcorns, trim? How do you actually put a you know, product SKU around that and product specs around that to extraction through, you know, contract manufacturing services catalogs? But if you have your products and services in terms of what you're selling, you're going to look at what your pricing and discount strategy is, because you control a lot of that. And then once you have that pricing discount strategy for those products and services in the channels, you're going to look at just what the unit economics are based on the volumes you can produce it at and what those selling and distribution costs are. And again, this is all one-on-one areas in every type of business. But in cannabis, at times, it's a challenge to be able to get to some of the actual marginal unit costs, what's variable and what's not, because there's so many other areas that you know, can't change and aren't available to change, whether it's rent or utilities, insurance or taxes. You really need to focus on your controllables. And once your gross margin, I think, is fixed, then it really comes into your, you know, how does your sales and marketing strategy, you know, work on the economics? And there's a lot of different ways to, you know, be able to leverage your sales and marketing ROI. One way is to be able to look at, you know, things such as marketing influence revenue, which is however much marketing that you spend, what type of attribution does that have in net new growth revenue? And growth revenue is generally defined as, you know, new stores that are opened or new product launches or, you know, new products in existing, you know, customers. But being able to measure that and having some threshold of that spend against the incremental gross margin that the marketing influence revenue drove, is one way to be able to do that. Another way that's popular in industries outside of cannabis is looking at your sales and marketing spend in one quarter, 1 month, and then looking at the growth of your gross margin over the next month and having some type of threshold of a 2 to 3x type of a multiplier there to understand how well your sales and marketing is doing. So then I think when you have your, you know, sales and marketing all set, then it's really aligning your OPEX and your people expense, you know, to the third leg. So that then comes your, you know, focusing on working capital and tax avoidance. So some of that, Eric's just 101, but the point in terms of being nimble and looking at the business and saying, hey, where and how do I need funding? You need funding for some part of it. And, you know, given that it's not a startup for infrastructure funding and it's a startup for, you know, growth funding of working capital or sales and marketing, those are those are the ways that investors, you know, equity investor or debt investor is going to be able to try to look at the business.
Yeah. I'm curious, you know, as we're talking here about, you know, getting a grip on your sales and marketing, and maybe this is an overly simplistic question, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself here, but in a vacuum, is it helpful to pursue vertical integration, or is that merely one other possible option in this choose your own adventure world for cannabis businesses? Or is there a legit benefit to pursuing that in 2023, if the state allows?
Yeah. I think that's always a critical question in terms of the strategy and the funding and the timeframe of the company. And again, there's no single strategy, but understanding, to your point, all of your goals. And if you are self-funding versus, you know, if you've taken money from investors and which means that you are there to be able to grow their investment, and over at what time and, you know, are you going to need additional investment or not? So I think those would all weigh into some of these decisions. But when you look at the case for vertical integration, it really is around, how do you actually control the quality and the cost of your key inputs? And while full scale vertical integration does not seem to be something that many different providers are moving towards for many different good reasons, tight vertical integration, if you're a vape company and you're producing your oil, or if you're a, you know, flower company, you're producing the majority of your, call it indoor flower, those types of strategies where it's very tight, focused, determined vertical integration still seem to be the most successful unit economics. And then if you're able to actually sell through one of your own channels, you're able to reap, you know, additional gross margins there. So I think one is, to your point, where are the regulations? Are you allowed to, or you're not allowed to do vertical integration? And then two is, what is the core key, you know, strength of the business around that? But majority of companies that I'm seeing, Eric, are really leveraging best of breed partners in different areas. But the challenge is when you, for instance, it just happened in California, when you outsource your distribution to a company, and then that distribution company goes away, you're really exposed. And so I think you need to be really focused as to what areas of the business you source, and then who your partners are. And it's an ever evolving, you know, review process.
Yeah, very good and timely example there to point to in California. You know, of course, here we are in the middle of 2023, and most businesses are finding out they need to right size themselves and right size their cost basis and you know, going back and perhaps reviewing even broader business strategies. So I'm curious, you know, do you find businesses grappling with this idea of maybe even the sunk costs of going down a certain path and finding out that it's not profitable, it's not working, and you need to go back to the drawing board and revisit some of these fundamental questions that we're talking about here? I mean, is there a point when it becomes too late for a business to pivot in that sense?
Yeah, I don't think it's ever too late for a business to pivot. I think it all starts with product and service, though. It's, you know, too often, and we certainly had a mindset of this and, you know, 2017, too often it's the, hey, if I'm able to produce it, let's go find a way to be able to market it, when it really needs to be a determined, roadmap as to the product or services that you're offering, and then understanding what you can do so on an economical basis and really focusing on that. So I think once companies get conviction around what the costs and the, you know, the product set looks like, I think looking to produce some, all, or none of that in-house is really a variable based on what your other options are, both in terms of, do you have a mature ecosystem with best of breed providers that you believe are going to be, you know, in business for a long time? Do you have redundancy in that supply chain? You know, or is it too risky and you still need to continue to invest in yourself? And so, you know, early days in Caliva, we were vertically integrated because, one, you had to be, and San Jose required it. But two, you know, we saw too many, risks in that ecosystem. And I'm surprised there's still so many risks out there today. But there still are. And so I think there's no one answer. And there's a lot of companies that are doing this and everywhere from being completely outsourced in a lot of areas. I think Old Pal is an amazing, company that's doing that. And then, vertical integration. I think you just saw Gold Floor and the parent company combined with that strategy in mind as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I know we've been talking a lot about mature markets, and that's kind of where a lot of the, difficult economic conditions are playing out in cannabis right now, in the U.S. at least. And there's been sort of the conventional wisdom, I suppose, has been that markets out west have served almost as a bit of a crystal ball for newer markets on the East Coast or the Mid-Atlantic or the Midwest. And to a point, that's not really true because, these markets have different structures. A lot of them are more set up with limited licenses, these newer markets at least. But in a broad sense, do you think that does kind of hold true? Meaning, should newer operators in, say, a Maryland adult use market or Ohio, perhaps, be looking to draw lessons from California? And I know that's been essentially what we've been talking about here. But if you're a new business in a place like Ohio, how much should you be taking away from what's happening in California or Oregon?
Yeah, well, a couple of things I'd say in that. One is if you're in a limited license state, and I've seen very profitable companies in limited license states, you have a lot of ability to make a lot of different mistakes or course corrections, and there's a lot of buffer there. So there's in terms of being able to gain investment and to be able to, grow, they're going to have a lot of ability to go do that. I think the number one area that I see with companies who have been around over time that have gone from a, medical market to a regulated market, most come back and say, I wish I would have built my first party, consumer database like from day one. And many companies overlook this because especially if it's in a new market, that they don't need to worry about that. But I think overall, knowing your actual consumer and having that ability to progressively profile them to be able to engage with them over time, it is the best, intel that any company, any brand, can actually receive. And so I would just encourage, even in the newest markets, even if you're selling through a wholesale distributor, have some type of consumer facing engagement site where you can educate the consumers, you can build the brand, you can look through service, you can engage with them, get product reviews directly. There's just so much benefit to having that first party direct consumer part of the business. And many companies just don't prioritize that. And, 3 years, 4 years, they look back and say, wow, I wish I would have, really invested in that. Now I got to play catch up.
No doubt. And certainly the tools are only getting better and more nuanced for that kind of work. And to that point, of course, time does kind of fly in this industry. And before long, we've got a handful of years to look back on and pull data from and learn lessons from. So I kind of wanted to wrap up here with a bit of a more personal turn and get a sense from you of what has kept you involved with cannabis. It's kind of a fun question I like to ask a lot of folks because as tough as it is out there, it's still a pretty incredible industry. And I just wanted to get a sense from you of what keeps you motivated and interested in this kind of work.
Yeah. So I think one is it's the most humbling, challenging industry that I've ever experienced. And so the challenge is immense. I learn every day. There's so many people that know so much more than me in every part of the business. And so I'm able to just understand and work and see what good looks like in those areas. So I think that's one. Number two is I still believe that there's, the groundswell of consumers are looking for plant-based solutions and really want to be empowered to choose their own, health and wellness. And they're going to look to cannabis to be able to go do that. And I really believe that there's so much more maturity that the industry can have in terms of, being very intentional and being very, solution-based to what consumers are looking for in terms of, integrating cannabis into their daily lives. I'm very, very passionate about that. And then I think lastly is just again, the people in the industry are so mission focused and mission based. It is, it's inspiring to be able to see the amount of energy and frankly, the work ethic that everybody puts in. And those are things that I love to surround myself by.
Fantastic. Well, I know a lot of those characteristics will be on full display among the audience out at Cannabis Conference just a few weeks from now. And Dennis, really super excited to catch up with you out there. And thanks so much for the time today on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Eric. Really enjoy the conversation. And we will see you in Vegas in August.
And that's a wrap on another episode of Beyond the Show. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Dennis O'Malley. I know I did. It was a real treat to get a chance to talk with him about some of these essentially case studies of businesses around the industry that have turned around their operations in one way or another, sort of through this choose your own adventure path to profitability and success. It's not easy out there in cannabis in 2023, and it's probably not going to be much easier in 2024. That's kind of the baseline understanding that we're all going into Cannabis Conference with next month. And it's a bit of a tough note to start on, but I think conversations like this give us a lot to work with, I think. Conversations about businesses that are doing well across the industry in different segments give us a lot to think about. So it's going to be a series of conversations like that out at Cannabis Conference in just a few weeks. So if you were intrigued by what Dennis had to say, if you want to learn more, if you want to add your own voice to the conversation, you're going to want to be there out in Vegas, August 15th to the 17th. Of course, you can learn more at cannabisconference.com. We've been talking about it on the podcast here. You can check out the archives at cannabisbusinesstimes.com or via Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. And just know that this conversation is far from over. We'll be picking up this thread in just a few weeks out at Vegas. So make sure you sign up. We're still offering a discount until July 19th, depending on when you're listening to this. That might be very soon, or maybe it's already passed. But either way, cannabisconference.com has all the info you're going to need. Get yourself signed up. We know you're going to be out there. We're excited to see you. Save yourself a seat, and we'll see you in Vegas in just a few weeks.